It's Friday evening on ABC local radio, digital and streaming around the country. Dom Knight with you. And some breaking news in the tech world. Stilgarian's here to discuss it with us. And author for ZDNet, The Drum, and Crikey, many other publications still. Pretty much everyone.
Everyone will pay me money. I am a word whore, Dom.
If you want Stilgarian to write about technology for you, Stilgarian, just Google that. Double R.
Yeah, oh, Google will even tell you how to spell it. That's a great thing. You know, did you mean this?
Did you mean Stilgarian? Yes, we did.
Yes.
Now, there's some big news reported by the New York Times this morning, their time still.
Yeah, this has just been published in the last few hours. One of the biggest things in the world of cyber war in the last few years that people have been talking about is a thing called the Stuxnet worm.
Yeah.
Which was a worm that infected the control network of the uranium enrichment program in Iran, and I can tell you kind of what it did, but no one had owned up to it yet. It had kind of, your best guess was that it was probably America, maybe with Israel's help, maybe not, but there was no smoking gun, as it were. What the New York Times has just published is the result of a long investigative process. Yes, it was the United States. It started in the Bush 2 era, and it became obvious during Obama's time as president, because that's when everyone, well, found the Stuxnet worm, because it, due to a programming error, it escaped just from Iran's control network in its nuclear facilities and turned up in other places around the world. And
so they created a virus, I guess, that was what's the difference between a worm and a virus?
A worm can propel itself around the internet, whereas a virus has to be delivered, say, by email or in an infected web page or something like that.
So a worm can go off and infest other systems.
That's right. It can move around the internet by itself. Yeah, Well, all of the industrial facilities are controlled by things called SCADA controllers, or programmable logic controllers.
Yep.
And everything that works physically in the world has probably got these things in them, whether you're talking an oil refinery or switching in a railway network or power generation facilities and all the switching for that. They allow you to control all of these remote devices from, you know, your big master control room.
Mm.
And there's only a few manufacturers of these tools. So what happened is they wrote a worm that was specifically designed to look around the network it was on to find the specific model of controller that Iran used in its control facilities. And then it said, right, is this controller operating this specific brand of uranium enrichment centrifuge? It is. Bingo. This is where we're meant to be. So then it did two things, basically. One is that it fed back to the operator's console telemetry that said everything is working normally, and then it just sped up those centrifuges to high speed so that they overheated and wore out and delivered, or went slow and delivered, poor quality enriched uranium.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. It's really like something out of science fiction, particularly the thing where it pretends that that everything's normal and then pretty much wreaks havoc and destroys.
That's right, and it's been revealed in this New York Times report that they started these experiments in about 2008. The program got the go-ahead. But it only became knowledge outside when, as I said, the worm escaped. It went out outside networks, and they found it wandering around industrial control networks in Indonesia and other places. Mm. And so people went, like, what the heck is this thing? What's it do? So they started analyzing it, and they figured out what it
that
was.
It did that.
That it did that, yeah.
And so you imagine that the Americans would have wanted, wouldn't have wanted anyone to know that it even existed. They would have wanted the Iranians to assume that it was some sort of error, operator error, or
that's
whatever
right.
it was.
That's right.
I suppose you'd have to call it enemy action to a degree.
And that becomes the interesting question, because when you start, and I hate the word cyber war, but that's what we're stuck with.
Anything with that begins with the word cyber sounds like it's from the late 90s.
It doesn't it, Justin?
Yeah.
And that's what we have. It used to be called offensive information operations.
Internet-based war.
Yeah.
War.gov. I don't know.
Well, it then gets the question of, is it an act of war that uses the internet to deliver the end result, or is it an act of war against the structure of the internet itself? So it's kind of a fuzzy term. But I happened to be at a, we were talking about this the other week, a security conference, and there was actually one of the head lawyers there from US Cyber Command, from the US Department of Defense.
Amazing.
So he ran us through the law, international law of armed conflict. And I'll admit I kind of nodded off for a bit. He was a very interesting speaker, but he was drilling down pretty deep.
Technical international law bits are probably not enormously important. So is this
The takeaway message was that an act of war has to be at a certain scale. Mm. You know, like if you just punch up one person in the street, that's just, you know, a random bit of violence.
Yeah.
But if you kill 1,000 people, that's starting to look like the kind of thing that's an act of war. Also, an act of war has to be done by a nation state.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's terrorism or it's just crime.
Well, it ticks that box.
Now, we didn't know that, though. It ticks that.
Yes, now, this is the revelation of today, is that it was the US government that did it.
And the remaining box to tick is that the victim of it has to call it out as an act of war against them, and Iran has not done that. Now, whether they do now, there is an argument that says, well, all they did was screw up some industrial equipment. No one was hurt as a result of that, at least. So does it count as war? It's kind of really sabotage.
I'm just reading the article here, and it took out temporarily 1,000 of the 5,000 centrifuges, the last in the series of attacks. They kept doing, you know, new versions of the worm and putting it out there.
Yeah, I think it was about a dozen different versions that were introduced to update it as it needed to be, as the Iranians are obviously trying to figure out what's wrong with their uranium enrichment plant.
Yeah.
Because it's just not working properly. So this is a fairly big bit of news that this is now a public thing. And particularly when the worm escaped, there was apparently like emergency meetings in President Obama's office about, do we now shut this whole thing down?
Yeah, they went into the Situation Room from what I've just read.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, but instead of shutting it down, Obama decided to speed it up.
Well, I mean, this is something that we've always assumed cynically governments were doing, isn't it? I mean, it's news in the sense that it's never been published by the New York Times officially.
Yeah.
This is a new phase of recognition. But I think people had the sense that these capacities were being... I mean, people talk about hacking attacks which possibly came from China,
Yeah. I did have one person who works in a place tell me that politicians don't cope with complex messages, so they just tell the politicians it's China.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, it's China attacking us.
Yeah.
And they get that. They know that they need to worry about that then.
But presumably Australia and other countries are developing these capabilities and trying to defend against other capabilities.
Well, we can point to countries like the United States, China, France, Britain, etc. We know very well they are, as Mikko Hipponen from the Finnish security company F-Secure said. He said, just look at the job ads at the defence contractors. And he just showed us. He said, let's go to Lockheed Martin's website. Let's go to SAIC. Let's go to Northrop Grumman. Let's go to BAE Systems. Let's look in the job ads, and we'll look for jobs that require a top secret clearance and have the word exploit in them. And that's the hacker's term. An exploit is the tool for exploiting a vulnerability
in
the
network.
When you take something over. And he said, here we are at Lockheed Martin. This week we've got 187 vacant positions and whatever. So there are thousands of people working on this stuff around the world. And
top hackers are joining the military industrial complex.
Absolutely.
Wow.
They pay very well.
I'm sure they do.
And to put some more numbers on this, something like Stuxnet, some estimates say it probably cost a few million to produce, tops. We're talking about a team of 5 to 10 programmers working for 6 months. Now, we know there is actually thousands of programmers working for the last X years.
Mm.
So that's Stuxnet. There must be a lot more of this stuff about that we haven't heard about yet.
And I'm sure that next time they'll be trying to learn and achieve more deniability. I'm talking to Stilgherrian about developments in tech, particularly in terms of worms, these nasty programs that infect our computers and then go on propelling themselves to take on other, to sort of spread elsewhere. And so Stuxnet's, obviously now that mystery's been solved, and it was kind of as suspected. And the New York Times mentions here that there were some European and Israeli officials involved in the program as well to
My understanding is that Israel's involvement would have been they needed somewhere to test this. They needed to test on the same model of uranium centrifuges, which were apparently bought from Germany, and Israel could do that. So America builds their own or something.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, there's also discussion, I remember in the NBN contracts, there was the decision made to exclude Huawei, the Chinese technology company, from bidding on the grounds of national security. And if we are entering into an era where people want to take over, you know, other computer systems in other countries, it does make a degree of sense, I suppose, without looking at that decision too closely, to say that you want to at least consider whether or not there might be a backdoor entry in some of the technology that's crucial to your infrastructure.
Yes, I mean, and that's the thing that you always worry about, because it doesn't take much thought to realise, hey, that would be a really cool thing to do, you know, and it'd allow you to break in. And this spy versus spy stuff has been going on ever since we've had electric communications.
Yeah, I mean, the internet was, of course, developed as a military network.
As a military research network, yeah. And it's and now it runs the planet. We've got 2.3 billion people using it in the world. Runs on the internet.
It does, and you wonder what back doors have been left open. Because if I remember correctly, still the whole point of the internet, why it was a breakthrough, was the idea that you could take out any part of it, and the rest of it would still function. Whereas
that's right.
Previously,
it automatically works out. Oh, that's damaged, or not working, or some equipment's broken. So I'll now route this traffic around another way automatically. Mm.
Yeah, and really clever stuff.
And that has raised some problems from time to time, because all of the what are called the core routers of the internet, which decide how to move the traffic around, will we send it through this fiber optic cable under the ocean via Guam to the US, or will we go via the one from New Zealand, depending on traffic loads? All these devices talk to each other at the level of a few times a second or a few seconds. I forget which way around it is, but very frequently to test the traffic levels and reroute the traffic. Now, what happens sometimes is a mistake happens in that. Usually it's operator error. And what happened the other year, for a period of about 20 minutes, a whole bunch of traffic that normally would have just travelled across the Pacific Ocean and be routed somewhere ended up being routed through China.
Yeah.
It happened another year where Pakistan wanted to stop its own citizens from visiting YouTube because it's subversive. And the way they set that up, that information to not route traffic to YouTube accidentally escaped from Pakistan, and a significant part of the world couldn't visit YouTube until they figured out what went wrong. Sometimes I wonder how the internet manages to work at all, because there is no central control. It is this complex. They talk about internet weather. They don't.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, of squalls and outages and low pressure systems, I suppose.
Yeah, and packet storms, which is where oh dear, someone's trawled up a cable from under the ocean because a ship's anchor dropped in the wrong place, and suddenly half the capacity into a nation disappears.
That happened to Australia a few years ago. Our undersea cable to Japan was severed.
Yep, there's a whole bunch of emergency cable repair ships stationed around the world that race to the spot where it's been broken. They send robots down to pull up the ends, and they splice in a new bit and drop it back down in the ocean.
So, yes, in this era where we're incredibly reliant on these things, you know, things like the ATM networks, all this stuff, can go out quite easily with some pretty prudent hacking. There are other worms being developed, and it's increasingly a threat to all of our systems, and there are some more that are in the news at the moment, aren't there?
Yeah, there's one that's been called Flame this week in the news.
Much more attractive name. It sounds scarier than Stuxnet.
Oh, I thought Stuxnet was scarier.
I think.
Perhaps we should say it with a German accent, Stuxnet.
Yeah, okay. Well, I can see how that could be scary.
Yeah.
It sounds like Skynet.
Yeah. Look, all of these internet security companies are obviously competing commercially, but they do cooperate and share information. So it's a bit like astronomers. If you find a new worm, you get to name it.
Oh, very good.
And so it was Kaspersky Lab, the Russian information security company, that found this worm, the flame worm, again in the Middle East, again around Iran. And this is a curious one, because Essentially, the International Telecommunications Union, which is part of the United Nations, had received some sort of complaints from telecommunications companies in the Middle East that some stuff wasn't working, and they needed to kind of figure out what was going wrong. And they realized it was a security problem of some sort, and Kaspersky Lab just happened to be who they called in to sort this out. And Kaspersky found this evidence of this worm. And then they started going, hang on, this is something that we hadn't previously detected. Is there anything back in our archived log files like this? And they went, yes, we can actually trace it back at least 2 years. This has been loose in the Middle East on computer networks. And the flame worm has been billed as the most complicated malware ever. Well, that we've seen and publicly acknowledged, perhaps. and it's designed for espionage. It's designed to be able to stealthily move around inside computer networks, infect computers, and then look at what data's on it, ship that data out, turn on, say, the camera and microphone on the computer without turning on the red light to say that it's recording, send those recordings back, turn on the Wi-Fi connection and have a listen to see what other computers might be nearby and try and infect them. And that all sounds very scary until you realize, well, hang on, that's really all the same functionality as a $200 Russian malware construction kit you buy from the Russian mafia.
Oof.
Now, perhaps Flame was, well, it's bigger and had more modules built in, but they said, oh, it's 20 times the size of Stuxnet. And they go, well, yes, that's just the way they happened to program it, that it ended up having more bytes of code in the worm. But the argument I put forward the other day was, as I said, we said earlier, if there are thousands and thousands of people working on these worms and deploying them from the militaries of various countries, do you think the one that we happen to find is the most stealthy and sophisticated?
Yeah, it's not a bad point.
I suspect it's the least stealthy and sophisticated of the lot.
It makes you wonder what else is out there. But, I mean, I guess the good thing is that for everyone who's developing these worms with a military capability, whether, well, perhaps, well, perhaps not good, but I'm sure that, you know, there's potentially could be beneficial and save lives as well. But let's say who's doing that, there are other people. There are people in the security community who are trying to stop it, who are discovering these things and protecting against them.
That's right. I mean, and the other angle on that is, at least they're not the criminals who are trying to steal our money. These are trying to do nation state stuff. All right. Mm. If it's the enemy doing it, they're the bad guys. But the point I make is, well, there's a kind of Cold War going on online that we don't hear much about. And I'm old enough to remember when there was another Cold War happening, which if things went wrong, it meant you were sort of atomic dust after breakfast the next morning.
Yes.
You know, where if we're just worried about an oil refinery not working or, you know, the power system going down for a while, that's less of a threat.
Yes, and I think we'd be grateful for that.
Yeah. And, we actually did survive the Cold War without nuking the planet, which is a pretty damn fine achievement, in my opinion.
Well, let's hope that the worms don't manage to get into the control systems for the nuclear weapon missiles. That's all I can say.
Oh, I'm sure they're perfectly well protected.
Yeah. Yeah, let's hope so. Thank you very much, Stilgarian.
My pleasure, Dom.
You can find him on Twitter at twitter.com, Stilgarian. Stilgarian.com is your site too. Is it not?
Yeah, it is. It
Go
is.
Go on there. Check out the other stuff he writes. He writes heaps of stuff all the time.
Some of it's rude.
Some of it's rude. Most of it's interesting. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Dom.